All right. So last week we began discussing the bracha of kedusha of the third bracha, and we started last week. We had a sort of part one. We talked about the idea of Kedusha being the idea of something being separate, being dedicated, but the idea we focused on for the most part last week was more the idea of being separate. And the idea that when we describe Hashem as being Kadosh, that the idea important for the third bracha of Shemona Esrei is the appreciation, the understanding that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is beyond our understanding. So I wanted to kind of go one more step, and then next week, just in that third point, but tonight, just so kind of level two, stage two of the idea of Kedusha. So another connotation of Kedusha, another layer of Kedusha, the Ramchal in Mesil Sisharim, in Perek Chaf Vav, chapter 26. So the Ramchal talks about a madriga, a level that he refers to as a tahor. A tahor is literally a person who's pure. So a tahor, the Ramchal says, is a person who is on the level at which he's reached a very high level at which he's sort of removed himself from involvement in physicality. He's purely involved in spirituality. He's a person who's only involved in the physical world by necessity. He's only interested in the spiritual, and he's only involved in the physical to because it's, you know, a necessity, because he happens to be, you know, a physical being, so he's forced to be involved in the physical world to a certain extent, but he's really not interested, and he's removed himself to as much as possible. And that's the level of a tahor. There's a step above this level, says the Ramchal, which is called a kadosh. A kadosh is also only involved in the physical world for the sake of the spiritual. But by a kadosh, the physical itself is an avoda. The physical itself is something which is part of his divine mission in the world. And the physical is elevated by his involvement in it. As a tahor would be better off if he could avoid any connection to the material world. He's stuck, that he's forced to be involved, but he'd really be better off if he could avoid it altogether. But for a kadosh, says the Ramchal, that Eloi hu l'machal ha'hu l'mishtahu, it's uplifting for the food that he eats and the drinks that he drinks. He's really elevating them through his involvement with them, but he turns his involvement in the physical into part of the framework of his spiritual involvement in the world. So what a kadosh is, what is a kadosh? A kadosh is one who, in a certain sense, in a certain way, beyond kind of understanding, impossibly combines the physical and the spiritual. And he turns the physical into something spiritual. The Mesil Sisharim gives an example of this, is eating kadshim, that the kohanim eat when a korban is brought. So, except for the for an ola, so the kohanim eat some part of the korban, and the kapara, the atonement or the effect of the korban, is accomplished through the eating of the kohanim, the physical act of eating the korban, through which the spiritual segment of the sacrifice takes effect. It's a physical involvement, it's a physical act, it's the eating of the meat of the korban, and it's through that the korban takes its effect. It's a physical act which has a spiritual role, which accomplishes a spiritual mission. And that's the idea of a kadosh, is someone who he's involved in a physical, he does take part in the physical world, but his involvement is not because of he wants to be involved in the physical world, but because he wants to bring the physical world into, he wants to elevate it to being part of a spiritual framework. The Rambam, in a couple places, but in Hilchos Yesodei Torah, so the Rambam talks about Ahavas Hashem, and the Rambam says that Ahavas Hashem is, he talks about, he gives a description of a lovesick boy who can't think of anything other than his love so much that he's paralyzed. And says the Rambam that Ahavas Hashem is more than that. So what could be more than that? What could be, the person who's so single-mindedly focused on his love that he's, brought to inaction. He can't bring himself to do anything else. So more than that, what Ahavas Hashem is, that the Rambam is describing, which is more than that, is when everything that a person does is for that person. Instead of being paralyzed into inactivity because of your single-minded focus on the subject or the object of their Ahava, that the person is living for that person. Instead, I'm turning the dedication of my life to being an avoda for that Ahava. And Ahavas Hashem is the point at which I turn everything that I'm involved in. I don't ignore everything else because I'm so stuck with, just thinking about how much I love Hashem. But rather, I live a life in which everything that I do is then turned into an act of an expression of that Ahava, of that love. So when we use this to describe Hashem, that Hashem is a kadosh, so Hashem is, kind of the ultimate puppeteer, the ultimate guide of this, the ultimate mastermind of this environment, or Hashem is directing. Hashem created a physical world, but the physical world was not created in order to have a physical world. The physical existence is something which is directed towards a spiritual destination and purpose. And therefore, in that way, Hashem is the ultimate kadosh, is the ultimate using the physical as a vehicle to be uplifted towards a spiritual purpose. Shabbos is called Shabbos Kodesh. Rav Huttner, in one of his Ma'amarim in Pachad Yitzchak about Shabbos, he talks about this idea. He's not explaining why Shabbos is called Shabbos Kodesh, but I think this very nicely illustrates this idea. Rav Huttner says that we have a klal, we have a rule, a principle that Hashem follows his own rules. He's not stuck with his own rules, but Hashem in general, Hashem keeps his own rules. But on the other hand, so therefore, one of the rules is, one of the things Hashem created is Shabbos, and therefore Hashem, we would expect Hashem to, so to speak, to keep Shabbos. But we say that Hashem is mechadesh betuvo b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh breishis, that Hashem is constantly recreating the world at every moment, and if he would pause, the Rambam speaks about this, Nefesh Chaim speaks about this, that if at any point Hashem would pause from his constant active creation of the world would cease to exist. The world only exists because it's Ratzon Hashem that it exists. If at any point it should cease to be Hashem's active Ratzon that the world exists, so the world would cease to exist. So Hashem is, every Shabbos is, the world exists on Shabbos, so that means that Hashem is continuing to create the world on Shabbos. So asks Rav Huttner, so how can existence be on Shabbos? It involves Hashem creating on Shabbos. And how can Hashem keep the world? Not why is he allowed to, because he can do whatever he wants, but how does that fit in with our general rule that Hashem keeps his own rules? How is it that we can say that Hashem is keeping Shabbos when Hashem is creating on Shabbos? So the idea, Rav Huttner says, is that when Hashem rested on Shabbos, the point wasn't just a cessation of creation. It wasn't just that Hashem stopped creating and therefore it was rest. Hashem's menucha on Shabbos was a positive act of resting. It was a point of defining the day of Shabbos as the point of destination, defining this as a tachlis. Menucha means that I've gotten to where that this is the purpose. You come to rest when you've arrived at where you want to be, and there's nowhere further to go. So Hashem resting on Shabbos was defining this day, which was the day of the spiritual day of Shabbos, as being the point of arrival, as being the goal of creation. Shabbos is about a reassessment of values, about prioritizing, about making the physical secondary and subservient to the spiritual. There's a halacha in Hilchos Shabbos. The halacha is, if you would take a bowl, a kli, and you would carry it outside on Shabbos, you would carry it, you would take a bowl and you would carry it from Rosh Hashanah Yachid to Rosh Hashanah Rabin. So chayiv skila, right? That you violated Shabbos, and that would be a malacha, that would be aser. However, if you would take a pachos mikashir, less than a, let's say for ink, so the amount of ink that you're chayiv for hotzah, that is you know, Torah prohibition to carry from Shazar Yachid or Shazar Rabim, is the amount to write two letters. So let's say you take an amount of ink which is only enough to write one letter, and you carry it outside, so you're pater. So let's say that now you take a bowl. If I would carry this bowl outside, I would be chayiv. If I now put my less than a shear of ink in that bowl, and I use this bowl, instead of carrying out a bowl, I'm now carrying out the ink, and I'm using the bowl to hold the ink. So now the bowl is no longer, I'm not carrying a bowl outside, I'm carrying the ink outside, and I happen to be holding it in the bowl. I'm putter. Even though if the bowl was empty and I was carrying the bowl because I wanted the bowl, I would be chayev. But now that the bowl is subservient to what I'm carrying, now that the bowl is a kli for something else, so what defines my act is by what's in the bowl, and what's in the bowl is less than a shear, is a shear that I'm not chayev on, and therefore I'm putter for carrying that outside. I mean, I don't violate Shabbos for carrying that outside. When something becomes tafel to something else, when something becomes secondary to something else, and now becomes defined according to that which it is subservient to, that which it is tafel secondary to. It's the same thing with Shabbos itself. Hashem continues to create the physical world on Shabbos. But on Shabbos, it's a redefining of values. On Shabbos is the day at which the physical world becomes just a kli for the spiritual purpose that is its mission. Shabbos is the day of Menucha. Shabbos is defining the purpose of creation. And the physical malacha, the physical creation which goes into that, is only a kli, is only a tool which leads toward that. And the spiritual, the menucha on Shabbos, is of course what Shabbos is about. And the physical creation, which is just the vessel which facilitates that menucha, is no longer malacha, because it's tafel, it's secondary, it is batel, it's nullified to that spiritual purpose, which is the point of that physical creation. And that's exactly what Shabbos Kodesh is, that redefining of values, where the defining of the physical as a tool towards the spiritual. And that's what Kedusha is. Kedusha is the point at which we take the physical and we define it as not something which is separate, but something which is meant to be a vehicle to bring the Kedusha, the spiritual, into the world. And they're not something separate. They're not something which are independent values. The idea of a Kadosh, the idea of Kedusha, is to turn the physical into a keli, into a vessel, to bring about the spiritual. The Rashba, the Abu Draham, and the Riva, all based on a Medrash, explain that this third bracha of Shemona Esrei corresponds to Yaakov Avinu. Talk about the first bracha is the bracha of Avram, Magen Avram.
I don't think you've really explained how the Hashem's creation becomes, because the spiritual is in a spiritual context, is no longer considered to be for malacha. I think you have attempted to explain the idea of Kedusha, but we can't really understand Hashem. So I understand that some of the concepts you're putting together, but I don't think that we're able to go from some of the points that you've made together into the conclusion you've made.
Well, no, the point is that it's not saying that it's not malacha. Just like carrying a bowl outside is also, it's not no longer malacha, but it's no longer a malacha which violates Shabbos, because since the carrying out the bowl is no longer for the purpose of carrying out the bowl, that no longer becomes the definition of the malacha. It's defined by what it's done for. So too, the creation of the physical, when it's being done for the, it's true, it still is malacha, but it's no longer malacha that violates Shabbos, because once it's being done as a tool, as a kli for the menucha, so that malacha is now defined as it's tafel to that menucha, becomes no longer a violation of menucha, because that malacha is part of the menucha, because it's subservient to the menucha.
I understand, but if you or I were to do that and say that our intent is to do this thing for menucha purposes, I don't think our rationale.
This is kfira, but Hashem is being over on Issa Durabana. It's Blachshan Srich Lagufa.
I mean, the Issa Durabana part is not is not such a problem. But
I'm not following what you're saying, but I think you agree.
No, so the point isn't that I can't. The point isn't just to say I have lofty intentions and therefore I can, you know, kill people for the right reasons. That's not the point. I can't define, if I decide Tuesday is a day of menucha, that doesn't matter. I don't have the ability to define menucha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not just that he's saying, well, now I'm doing I'm doing malacha for the right reasons. It's that the entire definition of the yom become, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can redefine that what Shabbos is a day of, it's defined as menucha. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't go through the Gemara about it, but the Gemara really talks about that. If you read the psukim, the way the psukim make it sound is that Hashem actually didn't really stop creating on Shabbos. He just created something very different on Shabbos. And the Gemara says is that Hashem created menucha on Shabbos. And that's really what it's not just that Hashem now decided to do the same thing, but now he redefined what the tachlis of it's not, he created the tachlis on that day by defining that day as a day in which the whole tochen of that day, the whole definition of that day is that it is the tachlis of creation. It makes everything else only meaningful because it leads to that. It's more than just that doing things for the right reasons. It's defining what the right reasons are. And that redefinition is really what we're talking. It's not something I can't decide that I'm doing something for the right reasons. That doesn't make it okay for me to do. If I say I'm doing this malacha, for Shabbos, that's not what Shabbos is. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying Shabbos was a defining of this as a tachlis. I don't know if that makes it any clearer.
Okay.
All right. The Rishonim talk about that this bracha corresponds to Yaakov Avinu. The first bracha is Avraham, Magen Avram. Second bracha corresponds to Yitzchak, talked about. The Rishonim, based on a Medrash, say that this third bracha, as the third one in the trio here, corresponds to Yaakov Avinu.
You said the Avodraham and who else?
The Avodraham, the Rashba in a Tshuva, and the Riva in his commentary on Shmona Esrei. So they identify that this bracha corresponds to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, we find, was this midah, had this midah of kedusha, like the pasuk in Yeshaya and Perek Chavtes says, "V'higdishu es kedosh Yaakov." Right, the pasuk associates the midah of kedusha with Yaakov. I'm trying to understand exactly that relationship. Why Yaakov is identified as having this midah of kedusha? The Mesilas Yesharim explains, we have the story in Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov left to go to Beis Lavan, that he stopped on the way and he realized he needed to stop and he went back to Luz, and it says that he went to sleep there and he put a rock by his head, or he put rocks around his head, and then it says when he woke up that he took the rock. So the Medrash says that if he put rocks, but then in the morning it was only one rock. So the Medrash says that all the rocks started arguing with each other, and they all said, "I want to be the one on which the tzaddik rests his head." and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made shalom among them and made it that they all turned into one big rock, and therefore when Yaakov woke up in the morning, he took the one rock, which was the fusion of all of the rocks that he had put there, took that and made it into a matzeva. So the Maseilas Yesharim says that why was it that the stones were all fighting over who Yaakov should, which rock Yaakov should lie his head on? The stones fought over having Yaakov lie his head on them because Yaakov was Mekadesh, the physicality with which he came into contact. It wasn't just, you know, that now we'll go into the Biblical Museum as Yaakov's rock, but that there's that Yaakov, the physical, the gashmius that he used, was used towards a spiritual purpose. Yaakov wasn't lying down to rest because, you know, he just enjoyed sleep so much, but he was resting because everything that was going to be something which was dedicated towards re-energizing himself for the next days of Odas Hashem. It was the using that physical towards the purpose of a spiritual goal. This is the same idea we find by Yaakov. It says that Vayivaser Yaakov Livado, that Yaakov remained by himself. It says after he brought his whole family over the river, so it says that Yaakov went back and he stayed by himself. So the Medrash says, some of the Mefarshim say Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, Levado and Lekado. The bays and the chaf are, you know, there's just one little dot is the difference between a bays and a chaf. So there's a hint there that he was going back for pachim katanim, that he was going back for small vessels. So why was it so important for Yaakov to go back for these pachim katanim, for these small vessels? Because Yaakov didn't want to waste any of his physical belongings, because he didn't want to lose the opportunity to bring it up to its spiritual completion, because Yaakov knew that all of the physical objects that he had been given could be utilized and could be elevated into something spiritual. As a waste of potential to let something just go to waste. The same thing we find that when Yaakov had to send a doron to Esav, it was part of his hishtadlus that he had to do in approaching Esav, was to send a doron. It says that he sent him in a baba yado. He sent, you know, whichever animals kind of he happened to pick up. Because Yaakov wasn't going to select and choose animals to send away, you know, to oblivion. These things were part of the property of Yaakov Avinu, which was going to be used towards a purpose. They were going to be dedicated towards something higher, and now he's sending them away to Esav, who's just going to, you know, make a nice dinner out of them. So it was giving something up, and Yaakov wasn't going to, you know, hand pick. So he said, you know, whatever happens to come along, we'll let, you know, Hashgacha decide what goes out. But Yaakov didn't want to be the one selecting which of his property is being sent out, is going to be sacrificed from not being able to be used to that spiritual purpose and losing that opportunity to be brought up to its completion. Yaakov also corresponds to the idea of Torah. We have the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that there's al shlosha dvarim olam omid, that the world stands on three pillars, and says that there's Torah, avoda, and gemilus chasadim. Right, gemilus chasadim is the midah of Avram of Chesed. Avoda was the midah of Yitzchak, was the gvura, the avoda, that self service, a sacrifice, and Torah is the midah of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov, it said, the pasuk says that Yaakov was an ish tam yoshev ohalim, and Rashi says, what does it mean? He was yoshev ohalim, that he sat in the tents. It says yoshev ohalim shall shame the aver. He sat in the tents of shame and aver where he learned Torah. The midah of Yaakov Avinu was also this midah of Torah. Torah is also the same point. The Maharal in the Siva Torah explains, writes that direct that the purpose of Torah is directing all of your physical action towards a spiritual end, sanctifying every minute of your involvement in the physical world. That's the purpose of Torah. The reason Torah has mitzvos that prescribe what you do with your involvement in this world is because that's the way in which you turn your physical life, your physical involvement in the world, into a spiritual mission. And that's the midah of Torah, and that was the midah of Yaakov, was to take the physical involvement in this world and turn it into a spiritual accomplishment. So interesting, we find that Yaakov is referred to as the Bechir HaAvos. He's referred to as the chosen of the Avos. But when the Gemara says that the three tfilos of Shachris, Mincha, and Mariv were keneged, correspond to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram set up Shachris, Yitzchak set up Mincha, and Yaakov set up Mariv. And the Gemara says, it's a machlokas in the Gemara, but the Gemara's conclusion is that Mariv is a Rishus. That Mariv, the tefillah of Shachris and Mincha, those are chova, those are obligations. And the tefillah of Mariv is a Rishus. So the machlokas Rishonim, what it means that Mariv is a Rishus. Shitas in the Rishonim, that it does not mean that you could just choose not to daven it. But whatever it means, to some degree, Mariv is less of an obligation than the other tefillos. What does it mean? What's the idea that Yaakov, who's certain level, the highest level of the Avos, that his tefillah seems to be on the lower level, seems to be the tefillah of Rishus? And the idea is, that's exactly what the higher level of Yaakov Avinu was. Yaakov Avinu's midah was that you can take divrei Rishus, you can take things which are optional, which are the way, the physical, the things that I choose to be involved in, and turn them into a spiritual pursuit. That was specifically because of Yaakov's Milo, because of the lofty level that he was, that his tefillah is rishus, is the tefillah which is optional, because that's the whole mid of Yaakov Avinu, is I can take that which is, you know, in all other senses, my optional realm of involvement in this world, and turn it into something which is spiritual, turn it into something which is dedicated towards a higher purpose. Those who were at my at the bris I made for my son Shmuel Yaakov, I spoke a little bit about the meat of Yaakov, so this will be a little bit of a repeat, but we'll add a little bit. So Yaakov says, Ishtam, Yoshiva, Ohalim, the first part of the pasuk that is an Ishtam, Rashi explains to mean that Yaakov was not an expert in Ramaos. He wasn't so experienced at trickery. As Kalibo Cain Piv, what was in his heart, that was the same as what he spoke. That the midah of Tocho Kibaro, the midah that, you know, his inside, is the internal and the external were in sync. There's no discrepancy between the inside and the outside. In the story of Yaakov, quote unquote, stealing the brachos from Esav, so very interesting. There's a lot of seemingly unnecessary setup involved in bringing about the situation that led to Yaakov's taking the brachos. The Medrash tells us that Yitzchak went blind in order that Yaakov would take the brachos. And Rivka received a nevuah, a prophecy, that Esav was not fit to receive the brachos, and that Yaakov was the righteous one who should receive the brachos. But Yitzchak didn't receive this nevuah, and Rivka understood that she received this nevuah and Yitzchak didn't. It meant that this nevuah was meant for her and not for Yitzchak. So if the goal here is just to make sure that, you know, the destiny of Klal Yisrael doesn't go into the wrong direction and get handed over to Esav, so seemingly this whole situation could have been simplified, could have been avoided by simply, you know, letting Yitzchak in on the secret, tell Yitzchak that Yaakov is the one who's meant to get the brachos, and he doesn't have to go blind. Yaakov doesn't have to steal the brachos. It doesn't have to be this whole, you know, very tricky kind of sneaky situation. So what exactly is going on? And seemingly, the whole the conclusion is that Yaakov taking the brachos was meant to happen because this was something that was meant for Yaakov Avinu. The test of Yaakov, it was a test for Yaakov against his midah of emes. We mentioned before, we discussed how Avram and Yitzchak, they each had tests that went against their nature, against the midah that defined who they were. Yaakov also had a test that went against his midah. Yaakov's midah is emes titan, emes liyakov, and his test of that midah of emes was his test to take the to trick his father into giving him the brachos. And I think in this way, the Medrash is very precise, is very meduyak, in that it says that Yitzchak went blind, Kedesha Yitol Yaakov as a brachos, in order that Yaakov should take the brachos. It doesn't say in order that Yaakov should receive the brachos, but in order that Yaakov should take the brachos, because the point was not just that the brachos end up by Yaakov, but specifically that Yaakov should go and take the brachos from his father. Rashi points out, if you read the story, very interesting, Rashi points out at every step how Yaakov never actually told a lie. At every step it says, Anochi Esav Bechorecha. Yeah, Rashi explains, Anochi, I'm me, Esav Bechorecha. Esav is your Bechor. Every step of the way, it's clearly not, you know, the straightforward meaning of what Yaakov was trying to say, but it was in a way in which everything that Yaakov said could have been twisted around in such a way that he was totally honest. He didn't say any outright, any flat-out lie. So what exactly was the test of Yaakov Avinu here? If he's being tested against his midah of emes, but he doesn't actually have to tell a sheker, he doesn't actually have to tell a lie. So the nisayon, the test of Yaakov Avinu, was not that he should lie to his father. Because that wasn't going against the midah of Yaakov Avinu. I mean, that would be against, but that's not the opposite of what Yaakov's midah was. Rather, the test was that he should deceive his father, that he should mislead him, that he should misrepresent himself. Because that is the antithesis of the midah of Yaakov Avinu, to be inconsistent, to not be toho kivaro, to not be an honest representation of what is really there. That's the opposite of the midah of Yaakov. Esav was the polar opposite of Yaakov Avinu. From the pasuk says, "May I am yiparedu," that from birth they separated, and the Sforno says that from birth they separated into diametrically opposite paths in life. The midah we find by Esav is this midah of inconsistency, of a disparity between what you see and what you get, what was present and what was really there. The pasuk says that Yitzchak loved Esav ki tzayid b'piv, which the pashut pshat means because he, you know, gave him the good food that he hunted. But Rashi says, the Medrash says, Chazal say that it's ki tzayid b'piv, that there was tzayid in his mouth. Who's his mouth? In Esav's mouth, tzayid b'fiv shel Esav, because Esav would trick Yitzchak with his mouth. He would ask his father frum questions. How do I take miser on salt and straw? Things that don't really need miser. He would make himself sound like he was, you know, trying to go above and beyond, and he was very scrupulous and careful with halacha, and make himself ask questions and make him seem like he was very pious. He got married, the pasuk says that Esav got married at 40. The Medrash says that Esav said, you know, oh, my father got married at 40, so I'm also going to go get married at 40. Very frum, very nice. But at the same time, we know that even though up until then he'd been snatching women from underneath their husbands. The Medrash compares Esav to a pig. It says that Esav is like a chazir. A chazir is of the four animals that have one of the kosher signs and not the other, so the pig is the only one that has the external kosher sign and not the internal one. And the pig rolls over onto its back and sticks up its split hooves as if to say, look at me, I'm kosher. Externally, it shows off as if it's kosher, but inside is where it's treif. That's the midah of Esav, is this disconnect between the spiritual and the physical, between the thought and the deed. Esav's head makes it into Maaras HaMachpelah, but his body remains outside. That's the midah of Esav, is this midah of the disconnect between the spiritual and the physical, between the way the thought and the deed, between where his head is and where his body is. There's a disconnect between the two. They're not really the same. There's a misrepresentation. Yaakov was the opposite. He was ishtam. He was simple or wholesome. There was no discrepancies between the internal and the external. And this, we mentioned, Yaakov is the midah of emes. Titan emes liyaakov. The Torah is also described as Torah's emes. And this midah of emes is the midah that we've been describing, where there's no discrepancy between one part of the story and another, when everything fits together. That's what the midah of emes is. There's nothing between the physical reality and the spiritual reality. There's no contradiction. Everything fits together. The Gemara in Shabbos points out, in Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph, the Gemara there says that the letters of the word emes are the first, middle, and last letters of the Aleph Beis. And the letters of the word sheker are all consecutive. So the Gemara there says that this is because sheker is common. It's, you know, easy to find sheker. It's all lumped together, and emes is, you know, few and far between. But the Mefarshim say another idea, that another reason for this is because emes is something which encompasses a whole picture. Emes is at the beginning, the middle, and the end. Emes is consistent the whole way through. But Sheker only has room to stand if you ignore everything else and you focus on just one point. If you look at, you know, if you, you know, the art of distraction, just look over here and just focus on this and don't pay attention, ignore everything else, then Sheker has room to stand. But if you look at the whole picture, Sheker, it's the inconsistency between that and everything around it which gives Sheker away. Say the best way to never be caught in a lie is just to never tell a lie, because once you start telling lies, you have to keep track of all of the, you know, remember who you told what and which way you're supposed. If all you have to do is keep track of reality, it's much easier. Sheker, it's there's the discrepancy between what is represented and what actually is. That's what gives away Sheker. And we could add that it's specifically the fourth, third, and second to last letters of the Aleph Beis which make up the word Sheker, and not the final letter, because Sheker has the appearance of reality in this world, as long as we're looking at it in this picture. But when you get to the end of the Aleph Beis, Sheker is already over. When everything becomes clear, when everything becomes revealed at the end, Sheker is already over. Sheker only has Raglayim up until you get to the end. But by the time you get to the end, by the time the whole picture is complete, Sheker is already finished. So there's no more room for it. Similarly, the Gemara points out that the letters of Emes all have Raglayim. They all have legs to stand, or a flat base. The Aleph has two legs. The Sof has a leg and a stand. And the Mem is a flat bottom. They all have legs. They all have something to stand on. As opposed to the letter of Sheker, they all come to a point, and that Sheker is something which doesn't have a way to last. Emes is enduring because it is authentic, because it's real. Therefore, Emes is something which exists in reality. Therefore, it stands, it lasts, it stays. This is all the Midah of Kedusha, a state of existence in which everything is part of a complete picture. There's no discrepancy. There's not a physical part and a spiritual part. It's all part of one larger picture. Both the physical and the spiritual are harmonized towards a higher purpose. And there is no disconnect. There's nothing which is written out of the greater picture. That's the Midah of Kedusha. The Kadosh is the one who takes the physical and brings it in line with a spiritual existence, with a spiritual goal, with a spiritual way of life. The disconnect, the discrepancy, where I have to ignore the physical if I want to be involved in the spiritual, that's not MS, that's not Kedusha, that's not Torah, when everything is not part of one picture in which everything fits together. Yaakov was the Midah of Tocho Kibaro, that the inside was like the outside, because there was no discrepancy between between the spiritual Tochein and the physical way in which that carried itself out. That's the Midah of Kedusha. The Higdishu es Kedosh Yaakov is the Midah of Kedusha, in which everything is part of one cohesive larger picture in which everything is able to be brought under that umbrella of a directed, purposeful existence.
Interesting that you started out by saying Kedusha is separateness, being separate, and now you're moving into the idea of weaving Kedusha into the whole.
So next week we're going to talk about that. It's good. I planted Mr. Rudman in the audience to ask that question. The perfect segue. Everyone has to come back next week.
I'd like to help you out.
All right. So we'll pause here for tonight. We're going to try and go one step further next week.
Where in Bachar Yosef did